Hey everyone, it's Wednesday, January 25th, 2012. You're listening to the Machine Readable Podcast, a sci-fi, fantasy, and comics podcast brought to you by the Arapaho Library District. I'm here with the round table full of bearded and non-bearded fellows. We're going to go around clockwise here and introduce ourselves because we're doing something a little bit different today. Today we are doing something, Nick, you described this as, what was it again?
Twilight in podcasting.
So the theme there is we're playing the board game Twilight Imperium and simultaneously podcasting. Except we won't be podcasting the entire 4 to 6 hour board game.
Right. Because nobody wants that.
No.
So let's go around and tell us your favorite space race and the current state of your facial hair.
So starting with you, Rob Weist. Rob Weist, ladies and gentlemen. First time on the podcast.
I'm Rob. My facial hair status is stubble. European stubble, I'd call it.
Euro stubble.
And my favorite space race would be the cat people from Red Dwarf.
That's an excellent choice.
That is an excellent choice. Mm.
Not the cat people from Doctor Who, or the cat people from the Elder Scrolls series, the cat people from Red Dwarf. Fair enough.
They dress better.
They're way more James Brownish.
This is Nick, your regular co-host. The state of my facial hair is hopelessly non-existent. I'm willing it into existence as we speak. We'll see how we're looking after a six-hour board game. And my favorite space race is the Space Lions, of course, in this very board game that we're playing.
The thing about Nick's facial hair is that this might be the catalyst. This might be the event that actually, like, at the end of the game, he's just this grizzled-looking man. And we're like, who is that? That's Nick!
Nick, this game is going to make you a man.
Yes!
I won't be involved, though.
Yeah. Let's not mention that we're drinking mimosas right now.
Right, to Nick's left is one of our recurring guests.
Yay!
And you probably already identified him based on that yay.
Based on that yay and the fact that things are awesome.
Who are you?
This is Jeremiah again, and my favorite space race would have to be the Reagan era.
Oh, God, that was my joke! I was going to say US, USSR circa 1960. I can't believe you stole it!
No, I didn't technically steal it, because yours is JFK.
Yeah,
era.
But... I was like... Hoping I was like two down, two to go. No one's gonna make the joke. Politics, here I come.
No, Reagan era, because they were developing weapons that you fire from space.
They called them Star Wars.
It was amazing as a child growing up.
But that wasn't so much a space
lasers.
Race as like a strategic defense initiative. Cold
semantics.
War. Yeah. We're talking space race. We got to be looking back to like 1950s.
Do we even really need to ask the state of Jeremiah's facial hair?
No.
Isn't it? You, like, listeners, we already know that.
Yeah, Evil Universe, yep, moving on. All right, so Jeremiah's left.
Hey, it's Jason Giardino.
And Jason Giardino, what's the state of your facial hair?
I like to call it Mountain Man Fabulous.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. No, I got a nice, lush action for the winter beard going on here.
Now, do Mountain Men use the word fabulous ever?
Well, that's why, see, it's the combo.
Okay.
It's Mountain Man, but it's also very soft.
Very cosmopolitan.
Yeah. And my favorite space race, I'm going to go along with Nick and my other favorite space lions ever, the Kilrathi from the Wing Commander games.
Yes! I kept saying, oh my gosh, these guys look exactly like the Kilrathi!
You know, and in Wing Commander 3, where you get to finish the game by committing genocide, you know, it's good stuff. It's really good.
You're the only other person I've ever met who knows that.
Aren't these all just a series of knockoffs of the space cats from Larry Niven's universe? What are they called again?
I have a copy of Ringworld upstairs, and I don't know.
Well, anyway,
Bring it back to the books.
Larry Niven kicked this whole space cat thing off. There's zero chance that I don't remember what those space cats are called. But they're not, the ones in Twilight Imperium, which we'll be playing today, are called something...
The Emirates of Catan or something.
It basically sounds like they're the settlers of Catan,
right?
But they're not.
They're awesome at trading.
They are, yeah. They're
which
like
is hilarious.
Space
lions. You would think that their main race power would be biting your face off.
This
or making
is the
you
most
get back in the
arcane,
car.
Meaningless series of nonsense. To anyone who doesn't know what we're about to play, so let me introduce myself and we'll give a quick explanation of what the game is. I'm Mark. My facial hair status is normal. and Optimal. Default. And my favorite space race that was stolen from me, so I guess I'm going to go ahead and just go with the Greys, because they're bland and unexciting.
The Greys?
The Greys.
Wait a minute. From Star Trek original series?
No, just the Greys.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. The, you know, like everyone who gets abducted by an alien.
They're Greys. Yeah.
I thought you were, for a second I thought that you were talking about the neutral guys from Futurama.
Oh, the neutrals are great. Yeah. Their disgusting neutrality. So, Twilight Imperium. Who wants to try to explain what this game is all about?
Nick, it's your board game. Well, it's your responsibility.
I purchased said board game, and this group of guys are probably not too happy with me about it, because pretty much what I did, for those who haven't seen it, Twilight Imperium is a box larger than any other box.
It looks like a coffin.
It's like four feet long. Yeah, you could fit like a ventriloquist dummy in there, probably. A really big one. And so I purchased it thinking that my good buddy Rob, who got me into board games, would learn it.
teach you to play it.
So I had these gents over to my place on Thursday night. I made them pop out all these tiny plastic ships, and I made them learn the game and kind of teach it to me. So this game is a kind of mix between Risk and Diplomacy, I think would be the best way to describe it.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think you just had a whole lot of faces of consternation.
Let's go back.
It's a game of Galactic Conquest, first of all. It's basically a knockoff sci-fi Star Wars-ish universe with full of all these different alien races, and they're all competing to be the race that seizes control in the galaxy.
As a result, there's much fighting of plastic ships, and there's much trading, and there's much, like, politics that you're talking between.
My assessment with having actually read the rules, unlike Nick, is that and we did a dry run where we kind of played a little bit a couple nights ago. I think it's Axis and Allies meets Puerto Rico.
With a hint of Diplomacy, but because there is some negotiation and threats.
Right.
Almost more Illuminati though than Diplomacy in terms of like your threats and your bribes.
Yeah.
And you're, you know, that sort of thing.
Not having played Illuminati, I'm going to say, yeah, that sounds about
it's
right.
It's true, because you couldn't call it Diplomacy, because most of it is kind of outside the rules of the game. I mean, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, where Illuminati is all about, like, threatening people and bribing people and cheating and stealing and, yeah.
I'm interested to see how much of that social dynamic comes to play here. According to our good friends at BoardGameGeek.com, this game is going to take approximately 4 to 6 hours to play. We will not be podcasting that entire time. Instead, what we're going to do is record a couple of times during our session. We'll be doing our usual rundown of things that we've been reading and watching and enjoying, and then we'll debate some of those things, and those are going to be our breaks from the game, and we will keep you, the listener, informed on how our game progress is going, which of us conquers the galaxy in the end, because you're probably really excited to find out how our board game turns out.
I think the more interesting thing will be listening to the general degeneration of our psychological state.
That's basically what we're attempting to
listen
document.
Listen to our relationships deteriorate.
This is going
to
be like a found footage movie.
All right, so it's going to kick off here with Mr. Jeremiah Wathen handing out our racial assignments.
That's right. I will be handing out
basically in the course of this game, we're each going to be controlling one of these crazy alien races who's fighting for galactic control.
Right.
And we are being assigned that by a series of cards that are being dealt out right now.
That's right. He's
shuffling the cards.
Completely random.
He's trying to decide.
They all have special little awesome powers. And here we go. First is Mark.
He handed a card to me. And I am the Universities of Jolnar.
Oh, fun.
Apparently, I am an academic.
So
basically, I'm fighting for tenure and galactic conquest.
And Jason.
I have the Emirates of Akan!
Oh!
Space Cats! Yes!
Jason has been assigned the role of Space Lions, and he's very pleased about
it. Much to Nick's chagrin. Okay, right. Now it's me. I am going to be the XX Cha Kingdom.
Ishkala Choka Kingdom.
The Chicka Chicka Chakas.
The Chicka Chicka Chaka. Oh, that's perfect. That's what we gotta call them. The Chicka Chicka Chaka.
Apparently, I'm a giant snapping turtle. which is amazing.
Just like in real life.
Yeah. It has Borgo stuff on my
Can we
back.
Grab a Sharpie and draw a goatee on that turtle?
Okie dokie, neato. Nick is going to be...
Nick doesn't care because he's not Space Cats!
The Naloos!
The Naloo Collective!
Oh no, see, those are the guys I was using before that always go first. They kind of suck, so...
Haha, oh thanks.
No, it kind of sucks to not be them. And Rob.
Finally, Rob.
I am the Federation of Soul.
Oh, you're the human.
Oh, yeah, Rob's human.
I have a lot you're the Federation. I have funk power with my soul, and it's going to be great.
I think you're basically just a big military operation, so...
I'm generic estimation.
No, if there's anything that, if there's anything that completely lacks funk, it's military.
So, also, okay. Humans. We've got humans, space cats, the universities of Jolnar, which appear to be fish heads from Megamind.
Or they kind of look like a little bit like a Mother Brain thing going on
there.
They
do, yeah.
A little, maybe Kang.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely
Kang. Do we have any predictions as to which unpronounceable aliens will be taking somebody down?
Nah, so, you know, we were going to talk about our general stratagem.
Yeah, real quick. No, so, because the game strategy. Is a balance of warfare and diplomacy and trade... I think we should go around and kind of just say where we're coming from personally, you know? And I don't want us to use this as an opportunity to outline our actual strategies. I want us to use this as an opportunity to start planting seeds of doubt in the minds of others. So I am going to be highly aggressive, and I plan on conquering any of my neighbors and just ramping up my military and, yeah. Oh, my special abilities are received. I receive minus one on combat rolls. I will not be doing that.
Apparently, I'll be going diplomatic solution.
Mr. Rob, what's your strategy going to be?
I'm either going to ally with Jeremiah and stomp on Nick the whole game.
No!
Or I'm going to ally with Nick and stomp on Mark.
Yeah!
It's basically whoever looks like more of a threat to me.
The latter, the latter. I'm going to go first the whole game, so that everyone may follow in my footsteps and say, what a fine move that was! That was awesome! I need to do that! And then the rest of the time I'll lay low, and then win as hour four approaches.
Well, apparently my little abilities for my space turtles here, I'm kind of a political guy, apparently. The turtles have a very big political presence, where...
That's cute.
Yeah, apparently this is what they do. They cancel political.
You know, I describe that race as one that's slow but steady,
but slow but steady.
And wins the race
and able to defend themselves if necessary.
Well, you can always employ a strategy of turtling.
Yeah.
So
that was an RTS
joke. Jeremiah
isn't
snapping back.
So I have the Space Cats, and their primary special abilities are all about trade, which, you know, it makes sense to maybe use that to my advantage, but reading the rules made me think of Axis and Allies so much that I just want to get into as many fights as possible because I miss those old, like, rolling the dice.
I really want to as well, and I am really about to lobby you guys not to make me be the Universities of Jolnar.
No!
Yeah, I don't think...
No, you gotta go for it.
You gotta go with it, Mark.
Yeah.
I know.
Rob is... 10 years coming, man. You got it.
If once you get that, nobody can do anything.
This is ridiculous. I'm gonna rapidly Google how you're supposed to win if you're minus one on all combat rolls. Okay, that's it. Then we'll be back later, probably about 2 hours into this mess. And we'll give you a quick update on our progress, and then we will start our, I know many of us here have seen some of the movies that came out around Christmas,
movies.
And those aren't even in theaters anymore, so it'll be really exciting for us to talk about those. We also have a hotly contested graphic novel that we will be arguing about. And by hotly contested, I mean everyone loves it but me. So we will be back for more Machine Readable Podcast after this. And we're back.
I would recommend it.
4 hours later. The game is maybe 33% done.
Oh, wow.
This is already a terrible idea.
This is the best. Are you kidding me? I love these kind of games.
Status report. I'm currently in the lead with 5 victory points.
Yet I have managed with zero victory points to have mutually assured destruction between me and Mark.
But it's, we're basically, like, my entire system is just this fragile house of cards that Jason is, like, poised to obliterate.
Mark is upset because he's absolutely no closer to getting tenure.
You know, I feel like making inappropriate jokes about professors, and we have a big following in the academic community.
Tell you what, next time we'll play the Chapel Harry Roach, which is a game all about getting tenure. That's the goal of the game.
That sounds pretty good, actually. Yeah,
and it has mind controlling roaches, so
so there's that.
What's new, guys? let's not talk about this board. Let's not talk about Twilight Imperium for the next 10 minutes.
Oh man,
Rob's giving us a look like, what else are we going to talk about? Rob, if you've ever listened to the Machine Riddle podcast, you might know that we usually talk about science fiction, fantasy, comics, movies. Seen any of those lately?
I haven't seen any movies lately.
Read any books?
Yes, but they're all old books.
Well, since this is going to be a long episode, let's just blast through things. Yeah?
Yeah.
Blasting? Yeah. Let's blast. All right, Rob, what'd you read?
I read Diamond Age by Neal Stephenson.
A classic?
Yeah,
that was
total classic.
Neal Stephenson's second published novel, I believe, after
Crash? No, it definitely wouldn't be his second. His first was Zodiac, which is about eco-terrorism.
Oh, you're right.
That's his very first, but then it's like his second big one.
So the Big U, which was not published till years later, then Zodiac, then Snow Crash, then Diamond Age.
Okay. Yeah, yep. And Diamond Age is amazing. It's definitely one of his best I've read. Like, possibly even as good, if not better, than Snow Crash,
what?
I would argue.
All right. I expressed, I think, last time my disappointment with the new Neal Stephenson book, so I'm glad you're enjoying one of the old ones. What else, Rob? Anything new and exciting? That's it? All right. Moving on. Nick.
Nick read a graphic novel that many of us have read.
Are we going to do that now? Are we going to do this? Let's do our round table, rapid, quick thoughts on other things.
Okay. I just saw Haywire yesterday. Steven Soderbergh has Gina Carano, who is a trained UFC fighter. And pretty much the idea of the movie was like, hey, she's really awesome, and she can kick all kinds of butt. Let's have her do all of her own stunts in an action movie.
Steven Soderbergh? That does not sound like his M.O.
I was going to say, that doesn't sound like what he does.
And yeah, so if you take those things and combine that director, what you get is like kind of four really awesome action scenes and a really weird, convoluted movie surrounding it. So,
so two thumbs up then.
I would like to see her in other films, but this one is kind
of
eh.
Okay. What else did you see? I believe you saw a lot of movies that we never had the
chance
to talk about.
I saw lots of
them. Let's just run through the Christmas ones real fast.
All right. I saw Tintin.
Quick, just like 2 seconds.
I saw Tintin. Really creepy, Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
Not that great.
Next.
Yeah.
I saw Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Really creepy, Uncanny Valley.
appropriate Trent Reznor soundtrack, but really a pretty long, slow burn for not a whole lot
of
payoff.
That was David Fincher, right?
David Fincher.
Tintin was Steven Spielberg.
Yep.
Yep, okay.
What else?
A lot of good filmmakers making a lot of bad
Girl
films.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, what else? Ghost Protocol. You saw that.
Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. I'm still not convinced that Tom Cruise isn't an old weirdo that I've, I don't know.
How are you convinced of anything
What else would he be?
Yeah, of course he's an old weirdo.
I'm not convinced that he's not an old weirdo.
What would possibly make you convinced that he's not an old weirdo when all the evidence points to him being an old weirdo?
He just wasn't that awesome of an action star in this one. I was kind of eh.
We are all agreeing with you.
That's valid.
Now, I'm curious, did you see the influence of Brad Bird's directing?
I was kind of like, No.
I thought
he did a great job, like, you know, with the framing of the action sequences and stuff, especially considering his background in animation. But no, not really.
Simon Pegg, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Simon Pegg was very token Simon Pegg, but he was fun.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does it well.
Yeah. Simon Pegg's great at being Simon Pegg. They should get him and what was the guy we decided on the last episode was really good at playing himself? Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti.
You should do a movie.
Simon Pegg and
Paul Giamatti. As themselves.
As themselves.
I'd go.
Making a movie.
I love those guys. I would see them in anything.
What else? Christmas movie wrap-ups. I saw Sherlock Holmes, Game of Shadows.
I heard it ruined you.
The first one was really dumb and fun, so just awesome. This one was really dumb.
Just not the fun.
No fun, but still is dumb.
Yeah, Mark.
So if you enjoyed the dumb of the Sherlock Holmes one,
Mark let me know that his New Year's resolution to embrace fun was promptly ruined by Sherlock
Holmes. Like 2 days. It was great. It was like, done. Okay, cool. No more fun.
So
all right.
48 hours of Mark fun. Hopefully you guys caught that.
You missed it. So
it was a small window.
Yeah, back down to Cynicism.
It's over. Okay, so anything else, Nick? Just the graphic novel that we'll get into?
Just the graphic novel that we're going to get into.
Okay, then moving on. Jeremiah.
I haven't read anything new. I was just on the show, so...
Oh, yeah, you were. Okay.
Get back on
the show.
Let's
get Jeremiah.
I've also been reading the manual for Twilight Imperium.
Have you played any sci-fi war games lately? Jason!
Last night I saw The Artist, which is a silent film. It's a black and white silent film. It's actually done in full screen mode as opposed to widescreen, because back in the 20s that was the mode that the pictures were in.
Really?
Yeah, so it's not even a widescreen movie. Interesting. And it's a black and white...
did it feel gimmicky, or did it?
No, it was just beautiful. It's a great movie. They do. I don't want to have any major spoilers. There's just a couple small moments where they do play with sound and the impact of sound on the psyche of the characters, and it's wonderfully done. There are actually some minor visual effects at some moments that give you an element that's not in a silent film.
How are the CGI aliens?
Oh, awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Nice. And the explosions were pretty
great,
good.
Great.
Okay.
No, in all seriousness, it's a silent film. The two leads are French actors, but it also has like John Goodman and some other big American stars.
And Jason's confused once again and thinks that this is an NPR broadcast.
I'm just saying I love this movie. You asked about movies. I love this movie, but I won't say anything more about it. Just go see it. It's going to probably get a lot of Oscar nominations. It's a great film. It was very impressive.
Sounds awesome. I read Habibi by Craig Thompson.
And you loved it!
Shall we return later to discuss that?
No, we keep building this up!
I know, that's the whole point.
Commercial break!
We've got another commercial break.
Jeremiah, this is the entertainment
We're
business.
About 20 minutes into this episode. We've got two more segments. We're going to do one more when we're... two-thirds of the way or three-quarters of the way through the game.
6 hours from now.
That's when we will throw down about Habibi. The best part is it's going to be fueled by all the animosity that the game has inspired. Like, it's going to be so much more hateful. And then we will do a wrap-up segment after that. And so stick around for more Machine Readable. High THC content, which is boosted by being grown under lights. The boys are gathering. We've been playing for approximately 6 hours now. The game is, according to the game's internal rule structure, probably about two-thirds the way done, maybe halfway done. We are hoping to expedite this process. I'm tired, you guys. This game is long.
That really sounded like a day log. You're like, Starlog, we've been playing for 6 hours.
This game is
awesome. I wanted it more to sound like I was like a tired war reporter, because that's how I feel right now. I'm just like...
You're like, everything tastes like buffalo.
Jason did make us delicious buffalo wings. Go ahead, Jason. Sorry.
I do have to say, though, that this is the sign of a good game for me, is that I am dead last place in this game. I think I have the fewest units on the board, and I'm still enjoying the heck out of it.
And I think he is in a position... So let's just give a quick recap. I know listeners out there probably have no idea how this game works, but I think we can explain some of the narrative thrust of what's occurred. So Jason's Space Lions, which are supposed to be a very commerce-heavy race, are positioned near my Space Professors, which are supposed to be sort of a tech-oriented race. We had some pretty serious early skirmishes, which nearly cost us our friendship. You were not listening for that. I think we have, in the interim, resolved our differences. The current battle that everyone seems to be aligning around is Mr. Rob Wiest over here holds the Galactic Center, the most prized planet being Mechatol Rex, where he has amassed the largest space fleet ever known to man. So tell us about your empire, Rob.
It's basically a bunch of dudes who just yell "Rob" repeatedly, but there's so many that it ripples across the universe, converting millions of innocent young girls.
It turns out that in space, no one can hear you scream unless you're screaming the word "Rob." Which I don't know why that works.
Rob's been just stroking Jason's dog the whole time, just like a classic Bond villain.
Like Professor Claw.
Well, she is evil, but you know it is actually. I do have to compliment the game design for this, is that the story centers around taking over that center plant, and our game, the story is centered around controlling that center plant. The mechanics really work towards that, so.
It's true. It's actually a really interesting game. I kind of have reached, it's funny, my race, the Space Turtles, I've basically been playing their character. All I do is I sit on one side of the board.
You haven't figured out a way to translate that into victory points, though.
No, that's the thing. I've built this immense fleet. I have half the board. No one dares touch it with me at all, and yet I'm losing really bad.
It's interesting. Yeah, I hope. I'm interested to see. We're either going to try to fight through two more rounds or see this thing through to the end. We'll let you know in a couple hours how it turns out. In the meantime, we were going to have a quick discussion about a graphic novel.
Dun, dun, dun!
No, it's fine. It's fine. No, this is going to be friendly compared to what's been going on for the last several hours.
We used up all our energies.
Yeah, no, it's just I'd rather just get along. It's less work. Someone describe who you'd be by Craig Thompson.
So, it helps to know the background of Mark and Craig Thompson.
This is not about me. Don't make this about me.
Because this is going to turn into a Mark rant in five minutes or so. So, Craig Thompson is a very celebrated graphic novelist. He both writes and draws these black and white, kind of big, heartfelt, love graphic novels such as Blankets. So... Mark doesn't like things that other people like, so he decided that he doesn't like Craig Thompson. So Craig Thompson's newest work is about a 600 or 700 page black and white graphic novel called Habibi. It is... Man, somebody describe this.
So the story centers around primarily a young woman... who lives in the Middle East. I don't think they ever... Do they ever specify the country?
It's some sort of province that I think is fictional, but it's basically an amalgam of several Middle Eastern...
It seems to be a fictional location as well as, it's very...
It's kind of an amalgam of, the UAE and, Pakistan and stuff like that. They kind of... They touch on a lot of different cultures.
But it's also very anachronistic, whereas certain parts of the story feel like they're in a modern setting, whereas others feel like they could be straight out of the Arabian Nights.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, no, that's intentional. And it follows without getting too much into the plot, she basically adopts... while she's at a young age, she adopts a very young man named Habibi. And it's basically about a number of tumultuous events in their life that range from being indentured at the Sultan's palace to trying to escape bad people to doing whatever they have to do to survive.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, even though it's, despite the setting, it's just... Let's talk first about the things that are really remarkable about the book. I think Craig Thompson's artwork is stunning. I mean, he's really an amazing artist.
He was completely influenced by Arabian calligraphy, so he really does quite a bit of that.
Right. Well, the drawings are extraordinarily intricate.
Well, and that's because he draws in the character of the story. The whole character of the story is that this is a story about people living in, that culture where everything is very intricate and drawn out. Their art is very, very super duper, detailed, and it's all, the whole thing, I wouldn't say he drew it, he illuminated it.
I actually really like that.
Because that's what it looks like. Like an old illuminated copy from, 1,000 years ago. Every page is just gorgeous.
Right. And I think you see that there's this really asynchronous narrative in which you jump around in terms of time and place constantly. And I think that was heavily borrowed by, obviously, the thematic foundation of the book is the Arabian Nights. And I think that labyrinthine structure of the Arabian Nights is repeated here in this book. And actually played to good effect so that scenes that happen years apart from each other are cast next to each other. And thus one informs the other in a way that's very direct.
True. Yeah, he does. He sets things against each other a lot. I mean, well, I would say the driving narrative of the theme for it was the Quran.
Well, yeah, so we can get into that. I think, and then that's where, okay, so that's where my criticism would probably begin.
There it comes. So, why don't you guys, way too civil.
Jason Jeremiah and I all thought it was a lovely graphic novel. We very much enjoyed it. And Mark was like, you liked that? Pretty much. All right,
I probably overreacted when we previously discussed this. I think when you look at what Craig Thompson does, basically the book is an exploration of the sexual identity of the two protagonist characters.
Yes, very much so.
And I think that, like his previous work, Blankets, that whole exploration of sexual development is informed by the way that that is balanced against the moral convictions spawned by the religious context of the book. In Blankets, it was American Christianity.
Right.
And here it's Craig Thompson's take on Islam.
Yes.
And thus, the scenes are, you know, every scene in the book is basically framed within stories from the Quran.
Yes.
They're kind of just sprinkled throughout the text. And so when you have a author who's trying to do things that are this grandiose, I think it's unfair to judge this book as just a, oh, hey, it was a nice graphic novel. Because, of course, it's a nice graphic novel. I think his aspirations are literary, and I think when you hold him to literary standards, the work really falls apart.
See, now, here's something where the reason I'll disagree with that is that this book, I think if you're trying to... one of the reasons I think Craig Thompson is such a great graphic novelist is that he writes works that, if they were expressed in a novel form, so if they're expressing a traditional literary novel, I admit I would have zero interest in reading it. I could not trudge through it. It would be too painful.
Yeah.
I felt that way with Blankets. I definitely feel that way with Habibi.
Yeah.
But as a graphic novel, I think it soars. And I don't necessarily hold it to that standard of a literary experience as much as I hold it to, does the overall package, you know, the way the story is put together work for me? And this story worked tremendously well for me.
But why would it be? I think it would be drudgery. I think you would be trudging through it if it were a novel.
Absolutely.
Because of its weaknesses. And I think the weaknesses are, one, the fact that your secondary characters in the book, everyone who's not Dalila or Zamzam, which are or Habibi, as he's, you know, as she refers to him sometimes, are everyone outside of those two is extremely wooden, extremely one-dimensional.
They're all plot devices. They're all thematic plot devices.
I would also point out that they are portrayed with kind of a disturbing racial bias for a book that's getting as much praise from sources like, you know, NPR and other, you know, sort of quote-unquote literary critics. All the Arab characters are portrayed negatively. All the black characters are portrayed positively. I think that's... And then there are characters spread throughout who appear to be white. I understand in the context that doesn't make any sense, but they sure look white the way they're drawn. They are also portrayed positively. So that made me really uncomfortable as a reader.
Well, but what about the one crazy Mongolian dude?
Which crazy Mongolian dude?
The one that they shack up with for a while there after they escaped Faust.
Yeah, there are exceptions.
See, he was a character that I actually thought was really great because he wasn't wooden. He was kind of a good guy trying to do good things, and yet he was this madman at the same time. It was just kind of breaking down.
Yeah, there are exceptions, but I think particularly in the early stretches when the female is held as a slave in the Sultan's palace, and you just see this culture that's portrayed as just being so hedonistic and immoral. It's hard to feel like there's a lot of depth there as opposed to proselytizing.
See, I really don't necessarily feel that way in that, a lot of characters are used as plot device, but I think there's quite a bit of depth to a lot of the characters. I think rather than it being all the black characters are good and all the Arab characters are evil, I think it's more, I think he tries to show how power corrupts. I mean, I think it's definitely the case of the Sultan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And maybe people that work with the Sultan. But I think you have, you know, even just some minor characters like the person who's willing to hire Habibi towards the end of the book for a regular job. I think the group of eunuchs are actually really kind of interesting characters.
That's true, because they were kind of on that gray area, too.
Yeah, so at one point, Habibi, in his wanderings, joins up with a group of eunuchs. And the storyline essentially... It explores the guilt he feels about essentially an Electra complex that he develops for, is it Dodola? Is that
Dodola?
Dodola, okay.
So he joins up with this group of eunuchs and kind of explores, you know, what his personal development's going to be. I thought that that was the closest the book came to actually breaking some really fascinating ground and looking at the role of gender and sexual identity in that culture in a nuanced way. I didn't feel like it quite succeeded because it was a blink and you miss it sort of scenario.
Well,
and everyone who's not within that community is portrayed as extremely negative, and yet in a way that doesn't explore why they feel the way they do.
Well, I will say, I think where that gets explored is later in the book, where there are, without too much spoiler action, there are several pages without graphics.
Mm-hmm.
There are several pages with text where essentially Habibi is just sort of exploring the meaning of his own life. And I think that's where the payoff is with those scenes.
But again, it's contained to that one character. I think the fundamental flaw in the work is Craig Thompson's able to come up with an interesting structure for his protagonist to operate in, but he doesn't fill the world around them in a way that really resonates with the reader.
Well,
and I think that's a failure of his as a writer.
And I can see that. His books are all about relationships between two people.
Right.
That's his gig. That's what he writes. That's his thing. I mean, he basically writes dialogues.
I don't believe that's how the world works. A relationship between two people is always informed by the relationship of the world around them, and I think it has to be more nuanced than that.
Yeah, I mean, I can see. It's reading Craig Thompson's work is like reading a play. It really is, in my opinion. It's not like it's a thing where you're watching this dialogue between these two people, and you're kind of enjoying everything through the context of them as a lens. You're not seeing the world at large. You're not seeing characters. You're not seeing a literature, even. It's just literally watching these two people do their thing.
And I think that's the deal, is they're the only two people that matter in the story. So there may be all these other secondary people who aren't that fleshed out, but I don't think those people need to be fleshed out.
Yeah, and you kind of saw the same thing in Blankets, where it's like everybody else you saw like one little aspect of their personality, but then you just like, move on.
But did you enjoy spending time with those characters?
I did.
Well, yeah, see, and that's why what brought me back, is I'm like, man, this story is so horrible, because every time I read it, something horrific happens to these people, and yet I can't look away because I see them going through it. And
I didn't find them charming at all. I think to sell a story like this, you have to really believe in that central relationship, and I just didn't feel the joy of their lives together.
I don't know if I necessarily had that same requirement. I mean, for me, I really see Habibi as kind of a character study, and in terms of it being a character study, I really see it as two, you know, deeply flawed individuals. I mean, Craig Thompson did not necessarily ask you to like these two people. He just asked you to look at their very, very interesting and dramatic lives.
You know, yeah, not so much flawed as just, man, sucks to be them. You know,
yeah,
like a beating down and type thing,
but
roll with it.
Yeah.
I mean, they survive through completely impossible odds, and that's what really got me. It packs a punch at the end, because at the end, Habibi, the main character, basically they go through all this stuff, all these crazy problems, they go through third worlds and just nonsense, and he gets to this point where he actually has to deal with first world problems, and that almost slays him. And to see him actually go through all of this context and then have to deal with, so what does it all mean? Why did I bother going through all this muck and mire and everything just to be here? And to have him deal with that was, for me, very poignant.
I see. I would have found it more poignant if I had been engaged by the character, and if I'd have felt like the character really, it was more three-dimensional. It was someone who I could feel joy in the life, and thus the tragedy had a payoff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, or, and vice versa. Like, you need. I just felt like Craig Thompson's work is too. When I say monotonous, I don't mean in the sense of it's dull or repetitive, but in the sense that it's always the same tone. Like, it never feels like there's that break that you need. And even within this really elaborate, labyrinthine structure, it always feels like it's just the same. Like, just the same feeling, moment to moment. His humor, whenever he tries it, falls absolutely flat.
Yeah.
It's just awful.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the work lacks. One other thing real quick, I just want to say,
the way the work is balanced against the Quran does not work at all. He completely, like, the stories he chooses from the Quran do not inform the story correctly.
I felt like I was really getting a disconnect there, because when you're reading the book, it kind of feels like it's one story, like, hey, this happened in the Quran, and then, like, you kind of get back to the characters, like, the main story, and I'm just like, I'm really not seeing how these two connect. I don't know if it's because I'm unfamiliar with the Quran or not, but I was just... They felt disparate to me.
That disconnect you're feeling is because the work suffers from the affectation of literary pretensions that it doesn't actually achieve. That's my problem with the book.
Hmm.
And so I'll stop writing. Okay. So so basically, he's an amazing artist. He's a decent storyteller. He's a crap writer. I feel like if he were to collaborate with a good writer, someone who could breathe the dialogue and the humanity into his work that would really make it sing, he would be amazing. But I just feel like he's trying to take on more than... He's biting off more than he can chew, essentially.
Well, I mean, I will say this, which it's an unbelievably ambitious work.
Yes.
And I would recommend reading it just on its ambition alone, because I really can't think of very much else that I can compare it to.
Sure,
And I think it's... I hope to see other talented people try to do something as ambitious as this. Because I did love it. I see your points, Mark, but I absolutely did love it. I'd recommend it to anyone, and I really am eager to see his next work.
Important caveat, because I've recommended this book to some people, it is good to know that this book is so sexual that it borders on pornographic.
I wouldn't say it's a skin type of way.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's definitely. I mean, if you
cannot read this book in public.
Well,
at all,
it depends on who you're surrounded by. I mean, it's not exploitative.
No, but if you read this on the bus, someone will call the police.
Think it's exploitative. that's fair.
So I think it's wonderful, and it's in context of the story, and it's beautiful, and it's great. But just know what you're getting into.
Yeah,
you do not want to hand this to a 13-year-old.
Jeremiah is that guy on the bus.
I would say I do not mean to be so critical of the work. I think it has wonderful things to say for it. I just wish it weren't so joyless. And I could forgive its failures if it were casual.
Will give you that, because I even found myself saying that in my head when I sat down to read my book. I was like, oh boy, I get to read this book again where something terrible will happen. this is what we're going to do again. What horrible thing is next?
I would argue that 3 out of 4 people would probably enjoy it.
Yeah.
and one will abstain and be like, can we get back to the board game, please? So speaking of joyless things.
Rob, are you convinced? Rob hasn't read it.
I haven't read it. Based on everything presented, I bet Mark's completely right. And it does sound pretentious.
Yes. Rob, watch Downton Abbey. It's awesome.
See, I also feel Downton Abbey's pretentious and joyless, and possibly The Wire.
No, not joyless at all.
So, and Battlestar Galactica while I'm on the
road. Oh, yeah.
Joyless. We're going to have an episode where Rob talks about things he doesn't like.
That's going to be a long episode.
All right, we should probably get back to our board game. Guys, anything else do you want to say about this board game as we enter its final stretch?
Going down, Rob.
Yeah, I'm about to get royally screwed from, like, 3 different dudes in the room next to this one. But I think we're all going to have a good time with it, so...
And we'll be back. We're recording. So and explain our end game, because it was complicated. We decided to call this one early.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Basically, the two military, juggernauts went to war, and
three military juggernauts, because Rob, Jason, and I were all in that.
It was like this trilateral war where the occupying forces got utterly destroyed.
Yeah, so to start it off, they got destroyed by, like, a secret agent blew up my station, I think.
Yeah, that was
There was, like, a plague on my planet.
That was Nick.
There was a few things that just
kind of screwed around with me, and then the giant like Death Stars came in and then just raised the surface.
Yeah, we had the option of glassing the planet and like irradiating it and preventing any life there, but we didn't even need to do that. So that was nice. And then after my galactic fleet held the, or after my fleet held the galactic center, Jason decided to send his over and take it for himself, knowing that I was weakened from my combat with Rob. how did that end up, Jason?
Well, Mark, if anything, you played a great game, but two, I've never seen die rolls like the stuff you put out today.
It was pretty horrific.
The dice were nice tonight. Sometimes Lady Luck.
And especially for someone who took a race that had minus one to all combat rolls, it was amazing.
it's true! You were the military juggernaut of the board, and you had combat.
The nerds!
We're the nerds, man. Like, we had high tech, you know? We just made up for that combat weakness with crazy technology.
I think this game has, like, some moral lessons involved, too, in terms of, like, you know, the assured mutual destruction, kind of like the end of war games with global thermal nuclear war.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just you build up and then eventually no one wins. Like, just
well, and okay, I'm going to go on record saying that, you know, we decided to call it early because it was like, oh man, the two big superpowers just destroyed each other. Mark's clearly in the lead, you know.
However,
three more rounds left, it probably is not going to shift.
However, Jeremiah, you had an endgame plan.
I did! I was going to do it!
I think you would have done it. I think if we'd played it all the way out, despite my significant victory point lead, you had a...
There was a card on the table that says you insta-win if you have 18 planets, and I only needed six more.
Yeah.
And the six were kind of right in front of me.
And they were right in front of me. I was poised. I had a giant, massive fleet of guys and dreadnoughts just because no one messed with me. I just stayed on the side of the board, did nothing. I was going to come in the back door and just...
Did we call Jeremiah, like, the turtle on the edge of
the space? Turtle on the edge of space.
And slow and steady was about ready to win the race.
I was totally going to win. And now the thing is, admittedly, that's kind of a jerk win. I mean, you know, that...
I think it would have been a glorious win.
If you get 18 planets, you deserve it. Like, that's insane. That's, well, you know, and the other thing, too, is that... I totally lost what I was going to say. I'm sorry. I had something else.
Your brain's not fried after 8. Your brain's fried after 8 hours of playing this board game. I can't imagine why.
See, the fun thing would have been to do it without any precursor of it, because, like, you know, I was sitting there telling Jason, "Oh yeah, I think you should go to war with Mark. I mean, when else are you going to be able to get his war sons off that planet? Go to it, man. You're the hero." You know, I'm like, you're the hero of this situation. Go to it. And meanwhile, thinking, man, if they just kill each other on their own spears,
their entire system will be ripe for the taking.
I remember what I was going to say. I think what's really funny about this game is that, sort of, with the luck of the roll, it can make your strategy just make you look like a genius or an idiot.
Yeah, absolutely.
I loved when you came back from your phone conversation after the die rolls, and you're like, and we're like, yeah, your entire army has been annihilated.
I was like, what? How did that? All of it? Like,
you mean even the little guys?
Because seriously, like if Mark didn't roll quite as well, and I took it over, it's like, oh my god, look at that, Jason's gonna win.
Easily.
Well, anyway, glorious game, gentlemen. Thanks for tolerating this. For the listeners, thanks for tolerating this rather unusual episode of our podcast. Nick, do you want to hype up what we'll be doing next?
Yes, we have been reading a book called Taft 2012, which is a pretty awesome political satire written by local Denver author Jason Heller. We will be interviewing him on Friday, so keep an eye out for that recording, probably up next weekend.
And once again, thanks everyone for participating. Thanks everyone for listening. We're Machine Readable, a podcast brought to you by the Arapahoe Library District. You can find us on our blog at aldmachinereadable.blogspot.com. By Googling ALD Machine Readable, by doing an iTunes search for similar-ish search terms, there's Twitter and there's Facebook. And good night. Good night.